sales win rates have plummeted to a mere 17%, and outdated technology and tedious manual processes are to blame. Meanwhile, managers lack the visibility they need to hold their teams accountable. But imagine a world in which these crippling issues are solved automatically. Revenue.io automates the most frustrating parts of sales so reps can focus on what they do best, selling. Completely automate pre-call research, logging conversation data in your CRM, writing post-conversation recap emails, and prioritized outreach. And as reps book more meetings and close more deals, managers gain the real-time insight they need to scale what's working across their entire team. Ready to say goodbye to tedious sales processes and watch your win rate soar? Head over to revenue.io to learn more.
It's time to accelerate. Hey, friends, this is Andy. Welcome to episode 740 of Accelerate, the sales podcast of record. Hey, I have another excellent episode lined up for you today. Joining me as my guest on this week's show is Craig Walker. Craig is the co-founder and CEO of Dialpad. Now, today, our primary topic we're talking about is technology, sales technology in particular. There's been a tremendous number of new sales tech solutions hit the market over the past few years, and the question has been, and still is to some degree, is it actually helping sales? And by helping, I mean not just so we can make more dials or send more emails, but are we using this great sales technology to actually close more deals, improve our win rates, boost our true sales productivity? And if we aren't getting the full benefit of these tools, how could we use them better? So that's what we're going to be talking about. Make sure you stick around for that. But before you get into that, let me talk to you for just a second about VanillaSoft. VanillaSoft is the industry's leading sales engagement platform, but mostly people refer to it as the solution. It's the solution to ensure sales development reps make the right number of attempts for every lead. It's the solution to ensure sales development reps use more than just email, that they consistently use LinkedIn and that dreaded telephone as part of their sales playbook. It's the solution to serve the sales development rep the next best lead over and over again so they hit their activity numbers. So the solution starts with the right sales cadence, and that's why I need to check out VanillaSoft's guide titled Sales Cadences, What Works, What Doesn't, and Why You're Frustrated. Again, that's Sales Cadences, What Works, What Doesn't, and Why You're Frustrated. And you can get your free copy now at vanillasoft.com/Andy Paul. That is vanillasoft.com/Andy Paul. All right, let's jump into it. Craig, welcome to the show.
Yeah, good to be here.
It's great to have you. So we're recording the day after Thanksgiving. So you and I were just saying we're both still full from yesterday.
Yeah, cannot wait to get a little exercise after this.
Yeah, definitely going for a run this afternoon. It's a little chilly here in New York, but it's blue and otherwise pretty, just cool. It's perfect running weather, actually. So
nice.
Yeah. So for people maybe aren't familiar with Dialpad, may take a moment to explain what Dialpad does.
Yeah, sure thing. So me and my co-founders used to run the Google Voice product. Mm-hmm. And so this was like 2008, 2009, 2010. And we started seeing more and more businesses moving to the cloud for Google G Suite and their email and documents and calendar and all that stuff. And we realized once your company moves to the cloud for basically its productivity suite, the idea of having a phone system or a communication system that's built around your desk and built around a desk phone made no sense at all. So, back then it was a little bit of a gamble whether CIOs would ever trust the cloud for their critical, voice conversations. But we bet that they would, and it just gives you so many more benefits. And so we left the company, left Google, started this company in 2011. And so what we do is basically the entire enterprise voice product suite. So we have a conferencing system called Uber Conference. We have a phone system.
I'm a subscriber too.
Yes, it's got millions of users on. There's something nice about just having a simple way to hop on a call and not have to enter pins and not have to do a whole bunch of nonsense to get going. We do that. Then we do Dialpad Talk, which is our phone system replacement that uses your mobile phone and your laptop and your computer much more than being built around a desk phone. Mm-hmm. And then we have two call center products called Dialpad Sell and Dialpad Support. And so kind of same thing, uses software versus desk phones, and really allows you to be, you know, as modern and flexible and mobile friendly as, you know, as humanly possible. And then the last thing is we acquired an artificial intelligence company that now can convert all those conversations into text instantly. And from those texts, you know, for an end user, you don't have to take notes. You can focus on the conversation. And for the company, you know, you can start doing things like popping up the right answer if someone asks a question, or how do you handle this objection in a sales context? Mm-hmm. Or if, you know, you have a BDR on the phone and someone mentions your competitor, you know, what's the battle card against that particular competitor? So it's like really adding a lot more capabilities to a phone call rather than just connecting two people.
Yeah. Well, I want to definitely dig into that a little bit more as we go through the conversation. So I think a lot of companies are still sort of trying to figure out sort of this whole unified communications as a service platform idea. I mean, maybe, yeah, I know one of your competitors just entered into a big deal with Avaya, which seems like it adds a lot of sort of validation to the whole segment.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of a no-brainer that every single company is going to move to the cloud for their communications. Like the idea of managing big giant phone systems and doing your own patches and updates and wiring and things like that just makes no sense. And it really is like when you look at the UCaaS space, most of our competitors were built trying to replicate exactly what Avaya or Cisco did.
A switch, basically. Yeah.
Exactly. Just serve it from the cloud, right? Whereas we wanted to look at it as, hey, we think the way people work is changing and it's much more fluid and much more mobile and much more dynamic, that we don't just want to give you a subscription version of Cisco or Avaya. We actually want to make something different, unique, and more compelling. So I think that's probably our biggest difference. But yeah, like,
well, so what does that feel like to the user then? That's the difference. I mean, yeah, if you're a small business, medium-sized business saying, okay.
Yeah, the nice thing about it, I'd say the biggest difference is you're using your own cell phone and you're using your own laptop or computer as your phone rather than having, you know, $1,000 Cisco piece of hardware on your phone, on mm-hmm. your desk with a bunch of buttons that you're trying to figure out how to use. So it really is, it's just the nice thing about having it in software versus hardware is, you know, we can push updates or new features every week or so, and you just automatically get them versus mm-hmm. that's always been the problem with hardware. You can only put like a new patch, you know, sure. once or twice a year, and it's a big deal to get it in there. Whereas, you know, software as a service, it just kind of continues to keep getting better and giving you more functionality. So just like a little more modern, and it's just a recognition that people are working from anywhere at any time for you and me from home the day after Thanksgiving, and you know, being freed from, you know, sitting in front of a phone on your desk is kind of like that liberating piece.
Yeah. I was trying to remember the last time I had a phone on my desk anyway.
Yeah, exactly. But the crazy thing is, if you look at the market though, there's like 500 million business desk phones and only about 10 million of those have moved to the cloud. So there's still this massive market that's coming.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Well, that's the thing that's why I start fascinated about the pace of technological change is, you know, we think there's this huge uptake, but I worked in Apple in the early days and people said, oh, it's only going to be a few years till everybody has a PC. Well, yeah, it turned out to be 15, 20 years before, you know, that number hit like 75% or something. I mean, it took longer. Same thing with broadband, even in the home. I mean, it took longer than people anticipated it would.
Well, particularly when you have, you know, enterprises and CIOs who've been in these jobs for decades, right? Like the idea of ripping something else out that makes them really, really comfortable to put it all into the cloud is actually going to take a while. And like, you look at giant things like, you know, large financial institutions or the federal government, like those are a ton of seats and it's going to be a long time before they're aggressive enough to move all that stuff to the cloud. So you have this long tail of laggards, basically.
Yeah, though the government's just in the process of awarding that, $50 billion, you know, cloud contract to somebody. Yeah, still TBD. Exactly. I presume telephony is part of that at some point.
I wonder. I don't think so. No? At some point in the future, it should be, but I don't think it is part of that one.
Interesting. What about mission critical applications like, you know, trading desks and so on? Do they still need to have dedicated lines, or can they?
I mean, at the end of the day, if you believe that networks and connectivity improves every single year, there's going to be a point where the benefits of moving even that to the cloud outweighs the risk of, oh my God, what happens if the cloud goes down? The cloud is now about 10 years old. It's getting more and more reliable every single day. Like, you remember in three, 4, 5 years ago, you used to see there would be like an Amazon outage and all these websites would be down for a day. It's been a long time since you've, knock on wood, it's been a long time since you've heard of one of those things happening. And I think it's as the cloud providers realize that they're getting more and more mission critical apps running on their clouds, they've done a lot in the back end to make sure that they have the redundancy and reliability to make sure that it continues work in all cases. So at some point, yes, like the trading desk or even hospitals and emergency responders should all be cloud based.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking in terms of traders, just without getting off the point too much, is, they've now got these program, not now, but, they've developed, the quants developed these program trading regimens that are based on receiving information, fractions of a second faster than I'd rather people, and arbitraging on the difference. So,
yeah, I think whatever makes those as fast as humanly possible, they're going to do.
Yeah.
But as far as like hopping on a phone call and taking a trade order from a customer,
yeah,
no doubt that'll ultimately get to the cloud.
Yeah. Maybe there, as far as I know. So let's talk about Dialpad Cell. You had talked about that. Is it purely a call center, or is it also for sales teams itself?
Yeah, it's both. So it's for think of it as an inbound sales line that can distribute to all your agents, and you can have all these different routing rules of, if they don't answer in certain quick amount of time, it goes to the next one, or the longest idle person, or you just have a fixed order. Like, you can set it up however you want. We even had one customer set it up where they didn't want the BDRs to know where they were in the queue. So it was literally like random assignment. So like everyone's like ready to grab the phone as soon as it comes in. And then like, if you don't answer within 10 seconds, you're out, and it goes to the next guy. So it's a really powerful inbound one. And then for outbound calling, it does like, it can do auto dialing or power dialing through a list that comes out of your Salesforce record. It'll show your local number, or like if you're dialing to,
local presence,
White Plains, New York, it'll show the local presence. If you catch a voicemail system, it'll leave a voicemail message and get you onto the next call. So it's kind of like an inbound and an outbound.
Got it. So then you just also recently acquired TalkIQ. So let's walk through what that means for.
Yeah. So
because this gets what you're talking about, that contextual help within a call.
Exactly. So what we saw was every single phone or telephony provider is really focused on connecting the two endpoints and making that a really high quality connection, which now feels like table stakes. Like,
right.
How do we add more to that? How do we make it better? So before we bought this artificial intelligence company, we'd do things like show you the LinkedIn profile of the person you're calling or the person who's calling you, and give you some additional context outside of just the phone number coming in. But then when we bought this AI company, what they did, which was really fascinating, they were funded by Salesforce and some other top tier VCs, is they had the ability to, they optimized their engine for the phone call, which is interesting, like 8 kilohertz audio it was optimized for. And then secondly, they did the ASR where they converted into text in real time. So it's not just like the call ends and then it converts into text and then your manager can get some insights of, oh, you did a terrible job of objection handling here, or you did a great job closing there. It can, now that it happens in real time, if I'm the rep in front of my computer, as we're having this conversation, if you were to ask me, how are you guys different from RingCentral? Bang, like it would pull up within half a second a battle card of how do we handle that question. Or if the guy's hemming and hawing and won't commit to a next meeting or a follow-up, it can coach you how to apply urgency, how to like offer a discount, give you pricing, like basically anything you want to set up based off anything that the prospect or the customer says, you can actually customize for yourself.
So triggered by keywords.
triggered by keywords. And then the AI or the machine learning on top of that is that beyond keywords, they can, there's probably 1,000 ways to discuss, you know, what the pricing is or timing or positive or negative sentiment. And that's where the AI machine learning actually comes into play, where it's like, okay, this is what they're really saying here is they're interested in buying, even though they don't come out and say it. So like figuring out those nuances and those mm-hmm. patterns is really where the AI kicks in beyond just keywords.
Yeah. So I think this is a fascinating topic for me because I love technology, embrace technology, but also, yeah, we have to be cognizant of what the potential impacts are to sellers, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, one of the problems we have in sales is widely acknowledged is that, yeah, we have this trend where sellers tend to be a little robotic.
Yeah.
Right. Because I've got my list of scripted questions. I'm going to follow my list of scripted questions. And, you know, if we're constantly feeding people information, are we A, sort of taking away their agency to some degree? And B, yeah, do they stop thinking altogether?
I've probably discussed this 100 times. I've never had that question before. I don't think so. I think at the end of the day, if I'm on a call and you and I are having a conversation and you ask me things and I'm well-trained and I know the answer, I'm just handling it, right? But I think where it helps is when you're in a situation where you don't know the answer, or you may be a little fluxum, or you're going on and you've kind of lost your train of thought, or you've lost something like, you can do all sorts of guide rails to kind of get you back into the flow of the conversation of, hey, Craig, you're speaking at 145 words a minute. You know, this probably isn't optimal. Slow down, take a breath. Just little things like that can make the experience so much better.
I like that. I mean, that to me is, that's something useful, right? Is you're at 148. We know max is 150 that people can really absorb. So yeah. Take it down a bit. Take a deep breath. Absolutely buy that.
Ask more open-ended questions. Like, you can start seeing like the percentage of how much you're speaking versus the other person. There's a lot of things that still gives you all the agency and the creativity, but just kind of keeps you within those guideposts.
Yeah, I mean, we have this sort of larger issue in sales, and some of it's being spurred by, you know, the conversational intelligence systems that are out there, you know, mm-hmm. Gong Course, you know, Ring DNA, there are a couple of those companies in particular that, you know, talk quite a bit about what they think they're learning from the data that they collect, which I would contend aren't valid lessons, right? They can really be applied on a one-on-one basis. So it's, you know, to me, it's like, how do we take this and really use it in a way that improves the individual mm-hmm. within the context of the individual, as opposed to what I believe is happening is oftentimes the way it's being used today is, hey, here's the word that the top reps use at this point in the conversation that does this. And we're trying to make everybody be like the top rep, but they can't be. What we want them to be is the best version of themselves.
Yeah.
So how do we use the technology to accomplish that? Because I think that's true of sales technology in general. We're sort of this golden age with our sales engagement platforms and so on and so forth. But if we look at sort of the external statistics reporting from like CSO Insights and the rest is, hey, we're actually getting worse at sales in B2B.
Yeah.
So it's sort of the irony that in the era of the golden age of sales technology, that performance seems to be declining, which to me doesn't say the technology is not good. It says we don't know how to use it yet to make the improvements that we need.
Yeah. Or it's I kind of have a theory that it's a little bit over dependent on technology. So like, it's almost like, remember in the beginning of Top Gun, you know, they were talking about how the kill ratio went down during the Vietnam War because everyone was relying on technology to go, and they set up the Top Gun school to teach them, you know, the art of the dogfight again and really give them talents. I think it's kind of the same way. Like we have outreach, we have all these sequences, all these patterns, all these things that are supposed to find you like the hot lead who's ready to talk to you right then. And there's a lot of automation, there's a lot of script, there's almost too much just reliance on automation and hoping that people are just going to answer emails and buy stuff. So I mean, I think it is a little bit more of the part of the reason why sales performance goes down is there's probably less selling going on, and there's more time dealing with these tools and dealing with hopefully automated things that make it easier.
I think people are looking for the easy in there, right? Yeah. I mean, there's this great
human nature, right?
Well, yeah, to some degree. But I mean, there was this great article in recent New Yorker, a profile of Roger McNamee. And, he's on sort of a campaign, sort of anti-surveillance academy campaign. Yeah. But it's a great quote. He says, one of the goal of a lot of sales tech companies too is that the goal is to eliminate uncertainty in decision making. And I think that's sort of the issue we're running into is to your point you just made, is everyone wants the easy, but then if they really stop thinking, this is still a human business after all. I mean, accounts for a good portion of this. What's happening? What are we creating in terms of a culture when that's the case? Because these tools are only going to become more capable. How do we reduce the learning curve? I guess is really the question, to get to a point where they're actually helping us.
Yeah, and I think that's the ultimate goal of all these things, right? Like the goal isn't. I don't think the goal is to say, hey, here's the perfect script, say these words, and then just hang up and go do it again.
Well, I think for a lot of people it is, though, right? I think for a lot of sales leaders, that's exactly what they want, because otherwise they have to get their hands dirty and get in and really, you know.
Yeah, I think that's kind of that's going to be an obtainium, right? So to me, I think it's like, I like the idea of being able to use this conversational intelligence or the voice intelligence that we have to not just make everyone a robot, but to like, my belief is every sales rep wants to improve personally. Like, let's not just create tools for the manager to be able to coach you better, but for the rep themselves at the end of the call to be able to say, okay, hey, here's how you did on this call in these various pieces. Here's how your pitch was, here's how your close was, here's how your objection handled, here's how your demo, whatever it is, and give me the ability to say, hey, and here's how some other people who have been pretty successful in your org have done it. So here's a clip from some sales calls that went well, where they actually closed the deal or where they advanced it down the pipeline in Salesforce. And you can start pulling in that actual data of what's happening in your CRM to kind of say, okay, did this, number one, did that conversation advance the close or not? Mm-hmm. And if you see the thing continuing down your Salesforce funnel, you can say, okay, that was a successful call because it's now onto the next stage. We set up the meeting or we set up the in-person demo or whatever it is. And using that to feed it back in and to say whether or not that was a successful call, I think is a little more valuable than saying, hey, here's my top rep, here's the words he says, mm-hmm. Now go replicate him. So, but I mean, like at the end of the day, it still is relatively early in this process. I think anything that gives people the ability to self-improve and gives managers the ability to coach better is a good thing.
Absolutely agree. I'm less convinced that every salesperson wants to get better, which I think is one of the which I think is really one of the fundamental issues from a culture standpoint.
The good ones do, yeah.
Well, but that's sort of an interesting point, though. That I was talking to somebody about this yesterday or a couple of days ago in a conversation, an interview I was having, and it was like, we're talking about sales books, right? And who reads sales books? And it's like, well, yeah, people read sales books. The people that are the 20% that want to get better. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, how do we set up a learning culture within our organization so that we expose and engage everybody to some degree of learning to maybe inspire them to want to get better?
Yeah, it's interesting. And you see it, it's most obvious in sales, but you see it in other roles too. Like, mm-hmm. like it's skill and will. And, you can learn the skills, but you can't. It's really difficult to learn the will.
Right.
Yeah, so the best sales guys I've seen are the ones who are going to be successful no matter what, right? And like, yeah, it's almost, much. It's almost the bell curve of the population. And you got to just do as best as you can to try to attract and retain and promote and create a culture that makes that type of person, feel super successful and supported. And then hopefully you're able to get more and more of those in. But yeah, there's plenty of people who look fantastic on paper, and then you get them in and they just don't have the will to do it, no matter what their prior successes were.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, or we relax hiring standards to bring people in that perhaps, you know, with our fillers or whatever. But yeah, I think my company offers is we do curated book clubs for companies. And we do a 10 book list over 12 months, provide reading guides, discussion guides. So like it's turnkey. So if you're a sales leader, you know you've got 15 minutes of something skills related, training related to talk about in every sales meeting. Everybody reads on a schedule. And you find a level of engagement. It's astounding. Yeah, the people that would not normally have read a book or taken an online class or looked at a video are like, well, this is cool. What's the next thing we're reading?
Yeah. Well, I didn't expect to be to be convinced to buy something on a podcast, but that sounds awesome.
We'll talk offline.
Yeah, let's talk afterwards.
So, well, we start. Covered one of the topics I want to talk about is just in general is technology helping sales, and it's to me it's like so much unfulfilled potential because I'm a little bit older than some people in sales. For me, one of the first big technological revolutions in the beginning of my career was FedEx, just to to show how far back things go. But at the same time, we're still selling large complex systems, tens of millions of dollars worth. Large enterprise could work a major account without the technology. So it's like, sometimes it feels like the technology sort of, a solution seeking a problem. But the problems are there.
Yeah.
It's just like, are we identifying them right and using, that's why I said the learning curve with technology and sellers is the big thing. Sales enablement being another thing now. It's like, all right. Yeah, it makes sense. This is valuable. But how are we using it? If it's just to serve up the right content at the right time, gotta be something better than that.
Yeah, I don't think you're ever going to be at the point of just grabbing someone off the street, putting them in front of a thing, say, "Okay, say what this thing tells you to say when it tells you to say it." I think you're doing the whole thing, like you're recruiting, you're finding your ideal candidate profile, you're training them on the products, you're training them on the market, you're training them on the pain points, and then you're hopefully training them on how they're performing. The one nice thing about the technology, though, is whether your manager is great at following up or providing coaching, et cetera, you at least get that automated piece of that coaching. You at least have access to the data yourself to go, if so inclined to improve, you have tools that are going to allow you to be able to do that.
Yeah. Well, that's why I think the contextual help in a call is exciting, right? Yeah. I mean, to me, that's if you're done in such a way that's forcing them to think, not giving them the answers in the call, then I think, okay, we've got something that can really help sellers improve, because it's not like there's certainty. Even with all of our best information, we're still dealing with people. It's not like, hey, this is like absolutely what they're going to do. But it's like, have you thought of at this point? And then I think, okay, then we get people thinking. Because this is my big concern, as you probably guessed, in sales, is I see too many sellers so wedded to a process, so wedded to their activity numbers, that and the metrics that they're gauged on, that I think we have the wrong set of metrics, and the behaviors are such that we're just sort of taking past behavior and automating it, which is not good because it wasn't good behavior in the past.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to automate past bad behavior. That's for sure.
Yeah. Which I think is sort of what we've done in sales to a large degree. And as you can tell, I don't really have the answers, but I think, there's ways we could do better. And I think part of it too is we just don't give ourselves the time, because everybody's so pressed. We want to grow quickly. We want to scale quickly. And we've got sort of the self-perpetuating vicious cycle where we're trying to bring in all this new exciting technology into sales. We're trying to scale quickly, grow quickly. and something suffers, and at least, you know, to my knowledge, some of the companies I work with, like in the SaaS business and others, that I've seen their win rates drop pretty substantially, or they exist at low levels. That to me, unless you're a unicorn with, you know, hitting the right market at the right time, it's not sustainable.
Interesting. Yeah, I say. Well, I think it's also we see a lot of, and I see a lot of B2B SaaS companies that'll do things like, you know, gear up for a big, you know, like they'll bring in a new CRO and they'll want to make a big push into the large enterprise, and they're going to pay. And it's a really expensive go-to-market function, and they're going all in. They bring in, you know, really expensive CRO who's been successful doing it somewhere else, who then brings in his really expensive reps. And then you have this, like, all this other supporting infrastructure of, you know, everything that needs to support an enterprise deployment, and everything from BDRs to field marketing to events to channel to customer success to account management. Like, you end up having this aircraft carrier battle group of cost.
Right.
And then, you know, frankly, you know, that product may not be ready to go compete against SAP or something. So it is, it's a lot of it is product market fit and timing and focus and segments and things like that too.
Yeah. Well, it also raises a whole other question, which, you know, from the rep standpoint, and it sort of relates to what you're talking about. It's like, sometimes, you know, it takes longer then people want to give it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I use the analogy of an athlete. You know, it's somebody like Steph Curry when he came into the NBA. Yeah. At the end of his first year, it wasn't toward the end of the first year until they really thought, yeah, maybe he's, you know, big enough, can withstand, he's got the game to play in this league. And, and so, you know, if we were sort of using like a typical sort of sales example, oh, 90 days, didn't onboard, not real good. And it's like,
yeah. Yeah, no, you kind of get into this trap of the financial model too, of like, okay, so the model assumes, you know, 90-day, 120-day ramp, right? And then you're like, okay, and if I just add this many more people, that, you know, like my productivity is going to go up like this, I'm going to have growth at X percent because I have this many sellers all now fully ramped, all being productive and all crushing it. And it's the last part of all crushing it. It's always, I think, everyone's challenge. I'm with you. It's an interesting time and dynamic, particularly for, you know, for startups where you want to have real high top line growth. Mm-hmm. And then now kind of like balancing that with a post WeWork world of, but be financially disciplined and don't just burn cash. So it'll be interesting over the next kind of year or two as people balance those two, you know, those two competing, you know, impetus of grow fast, don't burn as much cash, grow fast, figure out how to be profitable.
Well, yeah. And so I think, you know, that's why it's a perfect time for perhaps a company like yours and the product you have, is that in those instances, then the emphasis has to be on productivity. I mean, I mean real productivity. And this is...
Yeah, not just phantom capacity.
Well, yeah. And so it's, you know, for me, you know, sales productivity is dollars of revenue generated per hour of sales time.
Yeah.
Yeah, just, it's, you know, typical measure of productivity, which we tend to want to ignore in sales. But that, you know, is one that, especially if you're trying to be conservative with your cash and still grow, that has to be what the emphasis is, right? How do I generate, for every hour they're in front of a customer, how can I generate more dollars?
Exactly.
And having a tool where you can actually help people achieve that, yeah, it becomes pretty important. So,
yeah, and the thing that we like about having it just built into your phone calls is you're going to be on the phone calls anyway, right? So having this additional functionality and capturing all that stuff and being able to potentially improve a call while it's happening.
Yep.
Seems like something you may want to have, right? It's not like it's an additional thing where you have to do anything unnatural or sit in front of a certain client or do a certain thing. It just naturally happens at the core of our service. So when I think of, like, you know, sales reps, you know, driving home, catching a sales call on your mobile phone, you know, when I get off that call, am I going to pull into the house and go enter my notes into Salesforce? Probably not. I'm going to walk in, see my wife and kids, and like be have forgotten about it. But just having all that automatically go into Salesforce, having that turned into text, having it summarized up here where the action items and the next steps just out of that call, those to me are kind of like, in addition to the coaching pieces, just the, you know, just the making sure that everything's put in the right place. So when things do happen, you know what happened. Is this another benefit of having a real modern platform that that those types of integrations and those types of capabilities should hopefully make you a better sales organization?
Yeah. Well, I can serve as you're talking, sir, envision the day in my Tesla, I've told it to drive me home. I'm on a call. On the heads-up display on my windshield, it's giving me the in-call moments.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. It does.
Not that I want to be driving on the highway while somebody else is doing that, but still, nonetheless. All right, well, Craig, it's been great talking to you.
You too.
Tell folks how they can find out more about Dialpad and connect with you.
Yeah, so we're just at dialpad.com. My email is craig@dialpad.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at cwalker123.
Perfect. All right. Well, Craig, thanks a lot. Look forward to talking again soon.
Awesome. Really enjoyed it. Happy post-Thanksgiving.
Yeah, we'll talk to you soon.
Okay. See ya.
Okay, friends, that was Accelerate for the week. First of all, as always, I want to thank you for joining me, and I want to thank my guest, Craig Walker. Join me again next week. Well, actually, you'll be joining sort of me. I'm going to be out on holiday. However, we're going to be rerunning one of our most popular episodes of the past year with my guests, Ben Saltzman and Kyle Williams, who are the principals at Dog Patch Advisors, which is based in San Francisco. And the topic for this show was outbound prospecting and outbound operations, to be precise. The outbound operations, as Dog Patch has defined it, as a system for an organization to use to produce dynamic, relevant content that fits their particular outbound situation. And it's a system that tunes itself through self-learning with repetition. So you're going to make sure you check that out. It's a fascinating conversation. And if you heard it before, come back, listen to it again, because it actually goes on a little long, so there's a lot to learn there. Be sure to join us then. And before you go, don't forget to visit andypaul.com. Get your copy of my Sales Growth Planner for 2020. In this book, I walk you through a step-by-step process to create an incredibly effective sales plan that will help you hit your targets in 2020. Now, this is the same plan format that I've used throughout my sales career to generate hundreds of millions in revenue. And so for more information or to buy your copy, visit andypaul.com/planner and get your copy today. So we'll look forward to seeing you there. All right, friends, thanks again for joining me. Until next week, I'm your host, Andy Paul. Good selling, everyone.
Hey, sales strategists. At Revenue.io, we're not just imagining the future of sales, we're building it. We offer the world's most complete platform for revenue teams, and we're featured in the most recent Forrester Waves for both sales engagement and conversation intelligence. With Revenue.io, you can slash call prep time to seconds, guide your reps in real time to have more successful conversations, and after calls, we generate ready-to-send recap emails so sellers can keep deals soaring toward the finish line at light speed. See the future of sales now at Revenue.io.